When the book The Making of Milwaukee came out in 1999, it was the first general history of the city to be written in more than 50 years.
It's considered by many to be the standard history of Milwaukee, chronicling its founding in 1846, the arrivals of several different ethnic groups, socialist mayors in the 1900s, and other pivotal moments.
But a lot of stuff has happened in the 20 years since the book was written, and those developments have been recorded in a newly updated edition of The Making of Milwaukee. John Gerda is a Milwaukee historian and author of The Making of Milwaukee. He also writes for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel's Crossroads section on the first Sunday of the month. John, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Glad to be here, Rob.
Well, it's one thing to look back 100 years and pick out what's important in the history of, say, a city like Milwaukee. Was it more of a challenge to look at the history that's kind of still going on right now?
Oh, definitely. It's a moving target, and it's right in your face. You know, it's like people say their arms are too short so they can't read fine print. Things are just too close, so it's very hard to keep things in focus. At the same time, you know, I felt I had a responsibility to kind of bring this thing up to date into the second decade of the 21st century and at least, you know, make an informed judgment of what the major themes have been since 2000.
Well, reading your chapter, a lot has happened in the last 20 years, some big changes, some continuing trends. Let's talk about just how some of the look of Milwaukee has changed in terms of the buildings and landmarks. There's been a lot.
There's been a huge amount, and one surprise for me was that since 2005, the dollars spent on construction projects in downtown has been $5 billion, and that's not planned or projected. That is in the ground or on the way, and that is unprecedented. There has never been that much money spent, and the result is pretty much a transformation of the downtown area. The skyline is growing, and at the same time, the adjacent neighborhoods around the downtown area, the Menominee Valley. Maybe 3 years ago, I was taking a high school reunion class of 1955 around town. Some of those folks had not been to Milwaukee in 40 years. It took them in the valley. They did not know where they were. It had been transformed that much. So clean industry, bike paths, bioretention ponds, Three Bridges Park. So there have been just a revolutionary change there besides Potawatomi Casino and the Harley-Davidson Museum. So, yes, the physical look of the central area especially has really changed.
Talk about that Menominee Valley story. I've done a segment on Central Time at one point, and I think for somebody outside the city, we are not necessarily grasping how huge a change has happened there.
It's a huge area in downtown or the central Milwaukee. It's about a half mile wide, 3 miles long. And to a generation of Milwaukeeans who grew up before, I'll say the last 10 years or so, the earmarks were pretty much the smells of the Menominee Valley, rendering plants, Red Star yeast, you know, that very organic cloud that would kind of descend over the freeway on overcast days. They are gone, and it had been kind of an eyesore, and it's become an asset. So it was at one time probably the largest single employer in the entire state of Wisconsin, tens of thousands of manufacturing jobs there. And as the economy deindustrialized, you know, those jobs went away, and now it's been transformed to some clean industry, but also recreation and passive green space. The most amazing change down there for me, the Urban Ecology Center, which is a national pioneer in environmental education for kids, put their third center on the south rim of that valley. They're using the Menominee River, which had once been among the most polluted streams of the entire state, for outdoor education. They are doing actually water studies down there. So water quality has preceded all these changes, but it has been just a dynamic revolution.
And you mentioned the economic changes in Milwaukee. Milwaukee famous as an industrial city, as a brewing city. What has changed in the economy in the 20 years?
An awful lot. Deindustrialization was a trend beginning in the early 1980s that has continued, in some ways accelerated. And kind of the marker in the years since 2000 was the closing of the former A.O. Smith complex, closed as Tower Automotive in 2006. At one time, 9,000 jobs in that plant that was the biggest producer of steel auto frames and truck frames in the entire world. Those jobs are gone. Now it's a business park called Century City that is kind of struggling to find its feet. And a lot of those jobs were held by African Americans, so that has had a catastrophic impact on especially parts of the inner city.
Talking to John Gerda, author of The Making of Milwaukee and the newly updated version of The Making of Milwaukee, looking at the history of the city, especially what's happened in the last couple of decades. And John, one story that hasn't necessarily changed concerns about segregation, racial inequality, poverty in African-American neighborhoods in Milwaukee. What are you looking at over the last 20 years?
I think an awful lot of the same, and in some cases worse, and I don't want to overdo the tale of two cities kind of imagery, but Milwaukee, like most of its peers in the urban north, has been pretty much frozen in place. And what happened is you have all those industrial jobs go away, and you have at one time, I think 1970, more than half of African-American males had production jobs. Now it's about 14%. You know, so it's been just a catastrophic loss. And those jobs were two cars for the family and sending a kid to college, owning a home. And nothing has replaced those jobs on the entry level. So the way I put it was the inner city's economy was first flattened and then frozen. So you have a lack of economic mobility, and that leads directly to a lack of geographic mobility. So segregation really is kind of the result of a pattern where people cannot afford to move to what would be generally considered better areas, better conditions. So there has been certainly kind of a status quo that you don't want to have happen. And it certainly is not just Milwaukee. Chicago, Cleveland, Cincinnati, Philadelphia, Detroit, pretty much the same pattern. It's an issue, a problem that America has not yet gotten its arms around.
When people look back at American history of our time, I think they'll look at the Great Recession and the effects it had. And you write that Milwaukee really felt the Great Recession a lot. Can you talk about how certainly, that played out?
Sure. One of the big impacts certainly was a loss of jobs. I think Milwaukee lost 5% of its jobs in just 2008. A lot of those were manufacturing. But perhaps the most visible impact was the foreclosure crisis that was a trigger, a catalyst for that whole free fall of the economy. And you had, in the run-up, you have the housing bubble that had a lot of predatory lenders going around the inner city especially and selling the dream of home ownership with no underwriting, no money down, no proof of employment. So it really was kind of a disaster waiting to happen, and it did. When that bubble burst, foreclosure crisis claimed roughly 4% of Milwaukee's housing units, which is it's a lot of houses. And most of those, the greater number of those, were in the inner city. And it took a long time for that to kind of work through, and we're still working through it. So you have foreclosures, and what that leads to is board-ups, and what that leads to is teardowns. You know, so as I described it, there is lack of open space is not a problem in large sections of Milwaukee Central City. It's one neighborhood called Lindsay Heights, and this is cumulative, goes back to freeway clearance, urban renewal. In 1950, the population was something like 37,000. Now it's about 8,000. You know, so it's the term I use was Detroitization, and that's going on in large sections of Milwaukee Central City and elsewhere in the urban north.
Now, part of the story you follow in the original version of the book is the changing ethnic makeup over the decades, almost a couple of centuries in Milwaukee. How has that story continued over the last two decades?
It's the same pattern. Milwaukee has always been a city of newcomers. Back in 1890, 86% of the population was immigrants and their kids. That was the highest proportion in the entire country. Today, it's still a city of newcomers, but it is a majority-minority city. Roughly 40% is African American, roughly 17% is Latino, and that's been a real change. The growth of the Latino population, Mexican, Puerto Rican, and Southern and Central as well, gone from roughly 6% of the city's population in 1990 to about 17% in 2010. So that's been a major change. And in my old neighborhood on the south side, the old Polish south side, there are now certainly as many signs in Spanish as there were in English when I was growing up. So it's been just a dramatic change. But the important thing I think to point out there as well is it's also continuity, that we are still a city of newcomers, and now we've got sort of an updated edition of that with refugees from Myanmar, Somalia, Sub-Saharan Africa. So the story's always repeating itself.
We're talking about the history of Milwaukee with John Gerda. He's the author of The Making of Milwaukee. He recently updated the book to follow the events of the last 20 years or so.
You can join the conversation at 800-642-1234. What do you think were the most influential moments in Wisconsin history this millennium? Who do you think played a significant role in making the city what it is? Is there anything going on in Milwaukee today that you think would make future history books? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org.
We'll pick the conversation up coming up on Central Time.
We're talking about the people and events that made Milwaukee the city that it is today with John Gerda. He is a historian and author of The Making of Milwaukee, which was recently updated to cover the past 20 years.
And you can join in at 800-642-1234. What or who do you think has shaped Milwaukee's character, especially in recent years? How would you describe Milwaukee's identity today? And what questions do you have about the city's history, recent or in the more distant past? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org. Well, John, this wasn't in your new book, but Laverne and Shirley, for a lot of people outside of Wisconsin, might have shaped their impression of what Milwaukee was. Of course, actress and director Penny Marshall passed away just yesterday. She was Laverne in the show. Can you talk about how Laverne and Shirley maybe shaped the pop culture view of Milwaukee?
I think it was more an external view than internal. Mm-hmm. If you watch the opening scenes of Laverne and Shirley, there's nothing except City Hall that is identifiable as Milwaukee. That was shot in New York, pretty much. And she talks like a New Yorker. And if you recall the shows, Milwaukee was actually played a relatively minor role in those shows. Obviously, it was about the characters. But it did, in a lot of ways, cement Milwaukee's identity as a producer of beer and kind of a working-class blue-collar town. And I think it was certainly a wholesome image, but I guess you'd describe it as incomplete. I mean, there was more going on even then, and certainly there's been a lot more change since then.
Let's bring on a caller now. David is with us in Mauston. David, hi.
Hi, thanks for taking the call, and thanks for having the author. He's very enjoyable to hear on the radio, on the television, and in print. My comment is the most spectacular recent immigrant to Milwaukee is the basketball star for the Bucks, known by me only as the first name Giannis. I can't pronounce his last name.
Antetokounmpo.
There you go. From Greece. And I'm wondering, he's spoken very highly of Milwaukee. He says he wants to stay here forever. We've heard that before, but hopefully this time it's true. I'm just curious if the author, if you have some insight or perspective on how a successful immigrant like this basketball star Giannis is, could highlight others who have been successful, or how he could be, you know, how he's lent his name to highlighting immigrant success in Milwaukee.
David, thanks. A new star and a new arena to play in, too.
Right. People are so different. You think about an earlier star, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. His only cities, the only ones he knew, have been New York and Los Angeles, and he felt culture shock. He described himself as a city man among farmers when he came here.
In Milwaukee.
In Milwaukee. So you get a big city person who has a hard time adjusting. I mean, Giannis, who came up hard, you know, in Greece, and certainly a struggle in his own background, refugees from Africa. He has, I think, found in Milwaukee kind of family values, a slower pace. You know, these things are probably attractive to someone who has a less urban or less American urban background than Giannis. I was talking to a Greek friend just last week, and he said that he was in Greece last month, and he said, every kid in Athens, and he said, I don't mean some kids, I mean every kid in Athens has a jersey with number 34 in it. Giannis has become our international ambassador and certainly our most broadly exposed resident in the entire world.
David, thanks so much for bringing that up. We'll go now to Kim in Milwaukee. Kim, hi.
Hi. I haven't read the book yet, but I plan to. But I have a question specific to, I'm actually interested in some information about the Cambridge Woods neighborhood in Milwaukee. And if you can just give a little bit of a history about that particular neighborhood set right, next to the Milwaukee River.
Sure. Shorthand, Cambridge Woods is the area between the Milwaukee River and roughly Oakland Avenue. It's just west of the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee campus. And the pattern there is that on the east side of Milwaukee, the lakeside was also always wealthy, and the riverside was also always working class. So that's the dichotomy, or that's the difference in Milwaukee's east side. And by the time you get up to Cambridge Woods, no, you're almost in Shorewood. The Edgewood Avenue is the line there. You're in an area that is no longer so working class, it's more middle class, but that's the pattern. No, it's much more modest. I think you look at the lot sizes, Cambridge Woods, the average is 30. You get over toward Lake Drive, it's 60. No, so there's a real shift in terms of the economic geography of that entire area. The real amenity there clearly is the Oak Leaf Trail and the Milwaukee River. There's great trails down there, both mountain biking and more formalized hiking. And certainly as that river has come back to life, that's become a really important amenity. And as part of that Milwaukee River Greenway, that's another change, Rob. We're talking about the physical transformations. The Milwaukee River Greenway is the area north of North Avenue up to about Capitol Drive. It's 9 miles of riverfront and about 600 acres of green space. You know, so it's an urban wilderness within about a mile and a half of downtown. And I don't think any other city in the country has that. So it really is a special resource, and it is Cambridge Woods' essentially backyard.
Kim, thanks so much for calling in. We're talking to John Gerda, Milwaukee historian, author of The Making of Milwaukee. A new updated version of the book is out. John, you also get into the politics at the city and county level. One story I want to focus in on, a scandal at the county level leads to an attempted recall, resignation of a county executive, his replacement ultimately by a young conservative Republican lawmaker named Scott Walker.
Yep, that's the start of the Walker phenomenon. You have Tom Ament, who was kind of the old reliable, a courthouse insider. He was Milwaukee's county executive going back to 1992. And then they have this, and it was a scandalous pension plan, and I think it was not well understood even by the people who passed it. I know people on the county board who said they weren't sure what was in it. So they passed it, and as the stock market declined, it just left taxpayers on the hook for millions of dollars. So public outrage boiled over. Seven supervisors were recalled. Tom Ament was forced to step down. And you have this young legislator named Scott Walker from Wauwatosa who walks into what had been a safely Democratic seat on the White Horse of Reform. And in 2002, he becomes Milwaukee's new county executive, stays there for 8 years, and moves on to the Capitol in Madison. So that was the beginning of the career of a guy who became a national figure.
John, we've focused on the more recent history of Milwaukee. I want to spend a little time on the origins, the early days. Milwaukee was originally, what, three villages, and they didn't always play well together?
Yeah, that would not have been on the report card. Plays well with others. You've got Juneau on the east side, Solomon Juneau, Byron Kilburn on the west side, and George Walker on the south side. Walker had a number of problems, among them a temperamental lack of initiative, so he became kind of a distant third. Byron Kilbourne was genuinely nasty in terms of development. Juno was the guy, if you could have a beer with someone, George would have been a good choice. George would have been a good choice, but Solomon Juno as well would have been just a nice guy to hang around with. So you have this great bridge war in 1845 when they're actually trading blows over the issue of bridges. And to this day, the downtown bridges cross the Milwaukee River at an angle because the east and west sides laid out their street systems independently with no intention of conforming.
Yeah, they were
antique goes back.
Right. I mean, is there still that like cross river rivalry, or is this kind of, has that faded into the past?
That's faded. It was probably active into the 1930s when there was still debate about who would get the courthouse, you know, who would get the convention center. And what happened was kind of a very informal division of responsibilities where the east side got the finance, the banks, savings and loans, stock brokerages, law firms. The west side got mass retail and entertainment. And to this day, you got You've got the Pabst Theater on the east side, which is the old German theater, but you've got the Fiserv Forum, you know, the new Bucks Arena there, and a whole lot happening on West Wisconsin Avenue. So in a lot of ways, those patterns have remained. And there's, you know, East Town, West Town, you know, the commercial areas are different and perhaps compete on some level, but it's all one downtown, and that's been true for decades.
In our last few moments, John, we might have a snapshot of what a city is, a city like Milwaukee today. Taking the long view, there's always change. What it is today might be something really different in 10, 20 years.
Guaranteed. Absolutely guaranteed. You know, cities are always in the process of reinventing themselves. That's one of the things that makes them unique and, I think, very appealing. Big changes in the near future include kind of this runaway regionalization. We are becoming one megalopolis from South Bend, Indiana to Madison, and Milwaukee will become one node in that huge conurbation, as they call it. That'll be a big change. Another one that may be beyond the horizon for those of us alive today, but as climate change inundates the coasts, as the ice caps melt and the coastal cities get underwater, as drought dries out the West, where are people going to move? No, they're going to move to the heartland. Now, the Great Lakes have water. The soil is good. No hurricanes, no earthquakes. So there are scenarios. Some people are kind of contemplating where Chicago becomes the biggest city in the country and Milwaukee becomes, you know, part of that major economic and social heartland. So, yes, there will be change.
Two topics for future shows. John, thanks a lot for joining us.
My pleasure.
John Gerda is a Milwaukee historian. We talked to him about his newly updated version of his book, The Making of Milwaukee.